Backseat Box Office, episode number 92, for the weekend of June 22nd through the 24th, 2012.
Hey, this is Tony.
This is Jonathan.
We are the Backseat Producers. Welcome to Backseat Box Office.
Hooray!
Booyah! So, last week, last Thursday, because we recorded Wednesday, recorded Backseat Producers Wednesday. So, Thursday night, I had set up kind of a podcast date, as it were, with a guy that I've been chatting with on and off for like 6 years, almost seven. He is he's a podcaster, goes by the name of Jack Mangan. He has his Jack Mangan's Deadpan podcast. He was part of Slice of Sci-Fi and Winging It from way, way back. And at one point, the Winging It crew, they had to take a week off, and there'd always been talk of doing a fan cast, and Winging It had like they did some sketches and they had some fan contributed stuff to it. Well, Jack did this thing called Duel of the Fates, where he put like two icons of sci-fi, fantasy, genre, fiction, and pitted them against each other in just these absolute ridiculous competitions to see which one was better. Because, like, there was always five categories, and, like, one category was, like, love prowess. You know, just some ridiculous stuff. But they were always good fun. Well, I actually did a spoof of Jack's Duel of the Fates, because when he said Duel of the Fates, he would sometimes, it wouldn't roll off the tongue well, and it sounded like it would come off sounding like Doodle of the Fates. So actually, my parody was Doodle of the Fates, and I made fun of the way, because Jack speaks in a real deadpan monotone sometimes, and it really works for effect. It's pretty funny. So I did that through the whole thing, talking in this like really, really ridiculous monotone. And this was almost 6 years ago that I did this. So Jack and I have been on, you know, we've been, you know, chatted back and forth in Twitter and Skype and stuff like that. This was the first time I actually spoke with Jack. And we recorded like a 2+ hour long conversation. I think it's going to be aired on Deadpan this week, but I'm probably also going to do it as a special BSP because we couldn't record this evening anyway. So
pulling a podcast, huh?
Yeah, pulling a podcast. Well, Jack and I talked about it, we had always talked about this possibly airing as a special episode. I just figured it would air during my vacation time. Yeah, it turns out we need a little sooner than that. But yeah, it's a good conversation.
Shocker, you going for 2 hours on something.
Yeah. Sadly enough, most of the conversation was about me.
That's another shocker.
Yeah, I know. That's a big surprise. I am the guy who actually likes doing job interviews, though.
That's just disgusting. You know that, right? So that's terrible.
So after I got my job, after about a month, I was really, really jonesing, and I realized that I missed talking about myself for extended periods of time. Having people ask me questions about myself so that I could answer them. It's like I understand where the addiction to celebrity kind of comes from now.
Oh, that's just terrible. There's nothing worse than the job interview. So
I don't know. The way I look at it, at least I'm aware. I'm aware of my problem. I may not choose to do anything about it, but at least I have awareness of it.
That's true. That's fair.
And speaking of problems and addictions, so Andrew, our former co-host, was talking a little while back about Atomic Robo, the comic book series, and you know, with all the Android devices and Nooks and everything, I wanted to try to get back into some comic books, and I thought digital might be the way to do it. And I really haven't picked up on it too much. I looked at a few things here and there. I signed up for the Comicology app. I get regular emails from them about what's on sale and the new books that are coming out each week, because they do a lot of digital on date of publication kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, this week, and it's going to be over by the time this drops, but this week they did an Atomic Robo half off sale. So I picked up all six of the graphic novels for like $4 a piece. Not that I did this sight unseen. I actually, the first issue of the first arc is free. So I downloaded it, checked it out. It's pretty damn good. And based on Andrew's recommendation, I mean, the first issue is good, and I got it for free. And he said the rest of it's fantastic. So I went ahead and pulled that trigger. That was pretty easy. I haven't had the chance to read through it yet, but the little bit that I've seen, I've really enjoyed.
Cool. I've heard good things about it. I don't know. I haven't yet pulled the trigger on buying digital comics. To be honest, my wife has pulled that trigger before I have. She bought a bunch of the Voltron comics because was a big fan back in the day, and so she picked up on that. And I don't know what it is, but I've never there's just something about it's kind of like game books or anything along those lines. For some reason I have an issue with spending money on virtual goods. Even games a little bit. Like, I have dropped an uncomfortable amount of money on Steam games. Even then, it's like, only if it's really a good deal. Otherwise, somehow, I still want to have the physical thing. Like, I just haven't broken my habit for that. And I know that reading comics on, like, my iPad, way better than actually reading comics.
Right.
The actual physical comic is not as good as going through the electronic version, but I don't know, just still don't have that, haven't broken that chain yet. So someday I'll get over my psychological addiction to stuff.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I still buy CDs. I like CDs. I don't have a large collection of digital games. Like pure digital games. I still buy the console games. I got Diablo 3 for Father's Day, and I got the box. You know, that's the way it did. Now, to be fair, it's a DVD worth of content, and that's going to take a while to download. I mean, even on the DVD, that damn thing still took like, I couldn't even tell you. It had to have been at least a half an hour, probably close to 45 minutes to install. It was was insane. And that's just off the DVD. But yeah, I don't know. There's some things that I still can't get past there. Now, I'm getting a little more comfortable. Books, I'm getting a lot more comfortable with because of the Nook. Mm-hmm. You know, just doing the straight download. And unless a DVD or a Blu-ray is on a really, really good sale, I'm not buying that physical anymore.
Yeah.
It's just so easy to get it from Netflix or Hulu or iTunes or our Amazon, and almost everybody's got it covered now.
Yeah.
It's getting ridiculous how easy it is. The last two movies I bought, the only reason I bought them is because I had Best Buy reward points that were going to expire that day. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't spend $10, it would have been $10 that would just have vanished.
Gone away.
Yeah, it would have just gone away. So it's like, well, I kind of want to get Moon on Blu-ray. Because Moon's a good movie, and I kind of want to... That's one of those ones that I would be sad if I couldn't just watch it whenever I wanted. Because I like that movie.
There are movies, there are products, there are people that are worth supporting. I mean, not that buying a digital copy doesn't support them in one way or another, but just like having that physical copy on your shelf also tells other people, hey, I thought this was worth supporting as well. So, so easy to do when it's stuck in a file, you know, folder and buried under, you know.
Right. And there's also the some things that are a little more obscure, kind of like something like Moon. I also want to see, and I haven't done it yet, and I want to get Primer. I want to get Primer, a really good copy of Primer, because those are movies that are really fantastic that I think a lot of people I know would really enjoy, but most people aren't aware of them.
Yeah.
It's just under the radar enough that it's like, oh, have you heard of this? And it's kind of hit or miss. Some people have and know it, and almost universally, the people that have heard of these things and have seen them have really enjoyed them. So it's like, if I have a physical copy, it's like, hey, have you heard of Moon or have you heard of Primer? No. Well, here, go watch this. You will enjoy this, and I'm giving you a physical copy of it to go and enjoy. You know, borrow my copy, go enjoy this, so we can talk about it. Because
it's a constant reminder that, hey, it's here, and I want to, you know, do something with this at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's the reason why, no matter how great ebooks get, you're never going to kill off the publishing industry. There will be a desire for books. There's going to be a desire for physical copies of movies. There'll be, just because there's that additional layer of concreteness. This is mine. There it is. You know. So right. I don't know.
Yeah, and until, you know, people always, there have been a number of people who have said that that EPUB was going to kill off the print industry, and they said that as far back as the late 90s. You know, it's like, oh
yeah,
you can read books on your laptop now, you can read them anywhere. You know, and the biggest best argument at the time was, until it's comfortable for me to take my laptop into the toilet to read a magazine, you're not going to get rid of my magazine. Now that you can, you've got your Nook or your iPad or your Kindle or whatever. Well, yeah, okay, that argument's no longer valid. Especially when things like Nook have a big magazine presence. And I'm assuming Kindle and iPad do also. I'm not familiar with the product as much. I don't have time to pay that much attention anymore to anything but what I've got. I've hard enough time keeping up with my own toys, let alone seeing what everybody else's toys do.
True enough. Well, should we actually talk about what we're here ostensibly to talk about?
Oh, let's. let's do that. So this week, this past weekend at the box office, I think most of us, at least like the people who were involved in the recording last week, in and around it, we all pretty much knew that Madagascar was going to end up at number one, and it did.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us were fairly confident that Snow White and the Huntsman would end up at number five, and it did. The one exception to that was William, and he said that That's My Boy was going to be lower than Snow White and the Huntsman. And, man, I wish he was right. That was...
Yeah, for a little while, it looked like he was going to be right.
Yeah.
The weekend estimates had That's My Boy at number five, and then they flip-flopped when the actuals came out, so...
Right, right. And we'll get there in a second, but there's only $200,000 difference between the two.
Yeah.
So that is almost a rounding error. You know, when you get into the you know, tens of millions, which is not tens, it's in the teen millions. But anyway, so number one, Madagascar, 3, Europe's Most Wanted, did end up at number 1 with 34.1 million. Prometheus got number 2 with 20.7 million. Rock of Ages ended up in 3rd with 14.4 million. That's My Boy pulled in 13.5 million to end up in 4th. And Snow White and the Huntsman got 13.3 million and ended up in 5th place this weekend.
If so, only just.
Yeah, barely. Yeah, I mean, really close. Really close. And, Jesus Christ, why is Battleship still in the top 10? Now, granted, it only made 1.2 million, but still, it's in the top 10. This needs to end now.
It's still in the top 10 because...
our nation's long nightmare needs to end.
Well, I mean, you know, it was either Battleship or What to Expect When You're Expecting, and I think I tend to fall on the side that the nation made the right choice.
At least Battleship has explosions, so that does give it that little extra bump.
I mean, it's dumb and it's terrible, but they are still blowing up aliens.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how bad the premise is for blowing up aliens, you're still blowing up aliens.
Independence Day proved that.
Exactly. I got to use Independence Day recently in a argument about, nobody cares, never mind, I'm going to move on. Got to thinking about it, I'm like, I'm going to end up discussing rhetoric and literary theory, and I don't think this is going to go over well, so let me just stop myself right now.
Hey, save it for the comments. Do it in the comments section.
Needless to say, I got a really good point over on my brother-in-law with Independence Day. So, you know, there you go.
I kind of actually want to hear about this.
Maybe it can be an after the credits
discussion.
You
go. All right, so... Jonathan, I think you get the honors this week.
I think I do. First. I did well for a change.
You did. You did.
I had Madagascar, Rock of Ages. No, not Rock of Ages. That's My Boy and Snow White. I had those three in the right place. And then I just flip-flopped Rock of Ages and Prometheus. I thought they were going to... I thought the geek contingent was going to abandon the movie, and kind of they did. I mean, it dropped 60%, but the old man contingent didn't come out as much as I thought they would either. I think the vote was split between that and the old man Adam Sandler fans, so that must have been what happened there.
That is fair.
But that gave me a 23 for the week, so.
Yeah. You and William ended up with a 23 this week, and he got it slightly different than you, where you flip-flopped That's My Boy and Prometheus. Rock of Ages and Prometheus. He flip-flopped That's My Boy and Snow White and the Huntsman. So he made what should have been the better choice and had That's My Boy at number 5.
Hey, in his, and really, I mean, really, we should say this, in America's defense.
That's, yeah.
There were people, not necessarily going to name names yet, but there were people who gave That's My Boy a lot more credit solely based on the fact that we tend to be disappointed by the American public.
I will own that. I'm not going to shy away from it.
All things considered, we should be proud of the people that said no. No, Adam Sandler, no. Still a pretty disappointing number of people who said yes, but you know, that's all right. Well,
my favorite exchange this week, I think, in anything, came from myself. But the exchange between Uriah and myself on... I think it was Saturday morning. No, Friday morning on the comments. So Uriah posted the first comment Friday morning at like 6:45 a.m. I find Tony's faith in Adam Sandler disturbing. To which my response, my faith is not in Adam Sandler. My faith is in the movie going public to break my heart and my conviction that people are basically good. If people were basically good, Adam Sandler's career would have begun and ended with MTV's Remote Control. Which,
yep.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, that didn't happen.
So tell us what you picked.
What I picked. I picked, I clicked away from the page. I picked Madagascar at number one. I picked Rock of Ages at number three and Snow White and the Huntsman at number five. I too flip-flopped just two picks. That's My Boy and Prometheus. Unfortunately, they were two positions apart from each other. Therefore, I lost 4 points and ended up with a 21 on the weekend. So
that's a big flip-flop to make.
It was. It was. But I still am in fourth place overall.
You dropped. You were in third place last week.
I was
week,
in third
I
place, yes. But I'm not as far down as seventh, which is where I ended last season.
That's true. Also, top 10, baby.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, you hopped up into the top 10. So many tie scores. I'm tied with Tad for fourth place. Kugron, Jeff, and Uriah are tied for sixth. I guess those are really the only ties at this point. But... yeah, and Andrew, the one person who didn't participate this week, still has an average of 25.
What a jerk.
I'm tired of talking about that guy.
True. True.
So let's talk about... there are three new movies coming out this week. Actually, I guess technically there's two new movies and one expanding to wide.
Is that how that's working?
Yeah, because... The Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, it actually opened a little while ago, like a week or two ago, but it was in like some ridiculously small number of theaters, like two or six or something like that. I'm clicking around trying to see if I can find exactly where it was before.
All I'm seeing is that it opens this week. I don't see anything. And Box Office Mojo, at the very least, doesn't have any info on how much money it's made yet. So
interesting. Because I want to say it did open before this week, but maybe I'm wrong.
I have no idea.
I thought I heard somebody say that. Anyhow, Rotten Tomatoes is saying that it's in theaters June 22nd wide, but I guess everything is saying that. Never mind then. Maybe I'm just wrong. All right, so since we've already started...
I won't tell anybody.
You know what? Since we've already started talking about the movie, let's go ahead and keep talking about it. Seeking a Friend for the End of the World stars Golden Globe Award winner Steve Carell and Academy Award nominee Keira Knightley, and is the featured directorial debut of screenwriter Lorraine Scafaria. Set in a too-near future... the movie explores what people will do when humanity's last days are at hand. As the respective journeys of Dodge, Mr. Carell, and Penny, Ms. Knightley, converge, the two spark to each other and their outlooks, if not the world's, brighten. That is an awkward sentence, but that is exactly the way it reads. The two spark to each other and their outlooks, if not the world's, brighten. Swear to God, that's what it says. And this is copyright Focus. So okay. Focus Features has chosen to willingly put this out as the statement about what this movie is about.
So what we're saying is they don't have very good writers.
Either that or they have ridiculously smart writers who are writing completely over our heads. But correct me if I'm wrong, one of us is an English major.
Yeah, and graduated even with honors. And that doesn't sound like a proper sentence.
To be fair, there are hyphens involved. So,
oh, I may need to look at the sentence. Let me see this.
It's
I have had the opportunity to lay the English smack down since graduation a couple of times, so that's always been good.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I've seen some commercials for this movie, and of the three movies that are coming out this weekend, there is one that I am going to see, period. There's one that I would like to see, possibly might wait for, you know, video, be that Netflix, Redbox, what have you. May see it in the theater if, you know, have a date night or something. And there's one movie that I am absolutely, really not interested in seeing, though I would probably watch it if we talked about it for the podcast or there's nothing else on and my DVR is empty and I need something to record at 3 a.m. just to keep myself from going crazy one weekend when there's nothing else to do and I need to watch something. That is the exact set of circumstances that will be the reason I watch that movie. This movie, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which, by the way, has probably got to be as close to the longest title as... what was the whole title for Colored Girls? That was another one that was ridiculously long.
True. There's anyway, also The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or whatever.
Yeah, that one's still, I think, a little bit shorter than this one. This would be my second choice. This is not the one that I'm absolutely going to see, but this is the one that I do want to see. I do want to see it, but I'm not going to absolutely see it this weekend. So have you had a chance to take a look at that lovely sentence yet?
It's accurate. The trouble is, to get a little English nerdy on you, the trouble is that you have a plural that they then stick a singular in the middle of.
Right.
So if you said the two spark to each other and their outlooks brighten, that works. But when you throw in, if not the worlds, then you want to say brightens, but that doesn't work. So you could say, and their outlook brightens, and then maybe that would work. But I don't know. That's a terrible use of a parenthetical statement is really what it comes down to.
Boom. So I just wasn't completely mush mouth when I was reading it.
No, it's it is grammatically accurate. But they didn't really take into consideration what would happen if someone tried to read it out loud. It's a sentence that only works on the page.
To quote Harrison Ford to George Lucas, you can write this shit, but goddamn it, nobody can say it. I may be paraphrasing that. For legal accuracy, I'm probably paraphrasing that.
Oh, now I know you said that you'd only watch this other movie for the podcast, but I don't know why you got to be so down on Brave like that.
Oh, it's the ginger thing. No.
Don't like the redheads.
Actually, exactly opposite on both counts. So I knew that Pixar was making this movie a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then like
we've talked about it on the podcast several times.
Yeah. And they kept dropping little hints about it and what it was going to be about. And then like the teaser trailers start coming out and you get a little more and a little more and a little more. And every little more bit of information about it is new and kind of at a base level changes what you come to understand the movie to be about, and I like it more and more with each little bit that I'm getting. it's like, you know, I have a great deal of trust for Pixar. Now, they burned a little bit of that when they made Cars 2, because if you're gonna sequelize any of your movies, Cars, really? Now,
well, and especially when they took Cars and just went completely like secret agents in Europe. Like,
yeah.
wow, we're, you've been bought by Disney, haven't you?
Well, yeah. Well, and I mean, to be fair, the merchandising machine that you can make out of cars, I mean, you can't deny that.
Huge.
You absolutely can't deny the merchandising machine that came out of it. When the first movie came out and all the cars, toys, all the vehicles were coming out, it turned Julie into a collecting fiend. Mm-hmm. Because she was trying to get every car and every variant of every car to give to Holden at some point or another to make sure that he got it for her birthday or Christmas. And, you know, she had lists of, okay, this person's giving him this one, so we don't need to worry about that. And I mean, it got crazy. And she's normally not that bad. I'm the one who does that stuff. Mm-hmm. I've got the collector crazy in me. I mean, I was a comic book collector, so I know the dangers that lie there.
But, yeah. Well, and I mean, I worked overnights at Walmart, and for a while I was stocking toys.
Mm.
I mean, this is years after Cars came out, and we still had an 8-foot section of toys devoted just to Cars. You know, it's like,
yeah.
So you combine the kids movie aspect with it, and then the psycho insane Hot Wheel collectors. It's never going away.
Holy crap! I just saw something in text that makes me love this movie even more. Oh my god! So the text from Disney. Merida is a skilled archer and impetuous daughter of King Fergus, Billy Connolly, and Queen Eleanor, Emma Thompson. Determined to carve her own path, Merida defies an age-old custom sacred to the uproarious lords of the land. Massive Lord, here it is, MacGuffin. That, I just saw that in text, it was like, yes! Right. Massive Lord MacGuffin, Kevin McKidd, Surly Lord McIntosh, Craig Ferguson, and Cantankerous Lord Dingwall, Robbie Coltrane. Merida's actions inadvertently unleash chaos and fury in the kingdom, and when she turns to an eccentric old witch, Julie Walters, for help, she is granted an ill-fated wish. The ensuing peril forces Merida to discover the meaning of true bravery in order to undo a beastly curse before it's too late. This movie looks wonderful, and I cannot wait to take my daughter to see it. Because from the beginning, what this movie has promised me, even in the little bits and teases of it, and has never backed down from, is that this is a girl who is still a Disney princess. She mm-hmm. is still considered a princess that doesn't need a boy, fights for herself, and is taking and is seizing her own fate
mm-hmm.
by the bowstring. It has not backed down from that yet. And I'm excited for this. I really am.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, yeah, I think we haven't actually bought our tickets yet, but we might as well have.
The money is spent. It's just somehow still in your bank account.
Yes, yeah. It's like when you make that payment and you know that the check is in their hands and they just haven't cashed it yet. You're just waiting for the money to come out. It's kind of like that. Yeah, Aaron's got a ball game on Saturday morning, and the plan is, I think, that we're going to leave from the ball game to go to the theater.
There is a small chance I might try to go catch that movie. I might also go to see Avengers again just because I'll have time.
Hey, that's not a bad choice either.
Oh, I don't know what your animosity towards Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is. Have you seen the trailers?
Yes, and that's my animosity toward it. It just doesn't look interesting to me.
It looks kind of funny.
Well, it does. I don't look
know, maybe they're not.
And see, and that's I think that's my animosity towards it, is that it looks funny, but it doesn't look like they mean it to be funny.
Yeah, it looks like it should be funny, and they're going for the serious. Okay, so all of a sudden I see what you mean. Yeah, like if this were played as a comedy, a horror comedy, kind of like Shaun of the Dead or something.
Yes.
I'd probably be in already.
You know what?
Yeah, as I think about it, I think you're right. I think it looks more like if Shaun of the Dead was serious and didn't realize how ridiculous it was.
You know what? If this movie was, you know, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and it took itself about one-tenth serious, and then just, like, dove head-on into the steampunk tropes and just made a big goofball comedy out of it, I think that would work for me more. Now, I know a lot of people that, like, have read the book. I really enjoyed it. They really want to go see it. I don't know. I'm not one
of those people. I think I just saw the review that kind of solidifies it. The appallingly self-serious Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is stylized to death and lacks the subversion needed to support its inspired premise.
Yeah.
It's like, because you get the sense that when they do Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, or Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, that they're doing it with a wink and a nod.
Right.
Like, this is ridiculous, we know it's ridiculous, but we want you to read it in the sense that it's ridiculous and we're all just having fun with it. Yeah. I don't think they got that bit of the memo when they decided to make this movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't know, I just... And to see that Tim Burton is involved,
mm-hmm.
Tim Burton's stuff always just kind of has his tongue in his cheek. So I want it to be... I don't know. I guess I just want it to be funny. I want it to be something that I don't think that they're really going for.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he's involved, but he's not. He's just a producer.
Yeah, he's probably just a producer.
The director, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know nothing about. I don't know. Do you know who this Timur Bekmambetov
Do not. No, that is the first time I believe I've ever seen that name.
Apparently he had something to do with Wanted. He was the director of Wanted.
Oh, well, I haven't seen that movie either.
Maybe we'll have curving axes.
Oh, well. There you go, then. And another thing that kind of solidifies my idea that maybe they are taking it more seriously is looking at the list of genres that this movie is tagged as, and it's got action-adventure, horror, mystery and suspense, science fiction and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see comedy anywhere in that list. Mm-hmm. And that's an odd mix.
Yeah.
I mean some of it's pretty straightforward. The action adventure, horror, science fiction, fantasy makes sense, but to throw mystery and suspense in there, that does tend to lend me towards the idea that they're taking this more seriously.
Yeah. True.
So
well, there you go. I guess I have to make picks if we're done talking about...
Yeah, it's on you, Chief.
So, I think there's no real question that Brave is going to be number one.
I concur.
The trouble for me this week is where to put Abe. Which, you know, another reason we know that this movie is going to take itself way too seriously is really that should be the title of the movie.
Just yeah. Abe.
But anyway, I think I'm going to stick with my original prediction here. I think I'm going to go ahead and put Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter at number two. I don't know. Action movie, horror movie, suspense movie. It's getting a lot of play. You know, I've seen it around a lot of places. And I figure if I see it a lot of places, that probably is indicative of where else it's been. I figure there's a chance Madagascar can take it out, but I'm assuming that Madagascar is going to get cannibalized pretty hard by Brave. I think that's why I'm going with that. And then I'm pretty much going to go 3, 4, and 5 as 1, 2, and 3 from last week. Madagascar, Prometheus, and Rock of Ages. There was enough space between all of them that I don't think any one of them is going to catch up with the others. And, you know, even between Rock of Ages and That's My Boy, there was several million dollars, so I just don't see any of them dropping that hard compared to the rest that one would catch up with the other. Maybe maybe Madagascar, but if Brave is going to cannibalize Madagascar's audience, you got to figure Abe Lincoln's going to cannibalize Prometheus's audience too. So, you know, all of the people who are, I don't want sparkly vampires. I want real vampires. You know, kind of got to put up or shut up with this movie, you know?
that's a good point. Yeah.
If you don't support this movie, no matter how bad it is, what you're going to get are more sparkle pyres, not more vampires. Pretty much the way it goes.
Yep. Yep. I concur with that notion.
So those are my picks.
Oh, well, I keep going back and forth on a few things. I am going to ditto you to a point, and I may ditto you all the way. We're talking third base right now. It may be a home run here in a second once I talk myself into it. We're out of this. Yeah, Brave is number one. I was going to put Madagascar 3 at number 2, and then I realized that, hey, that's another kids movie. So I have a feeling that unless Brave is, and I think this is the only way that this is going to work out, if Brave does so well that it's sold out and you've already got your kids at the theater and you have to get them into something, you're going to shove them into Madagascar 3 just to keep them from squalling. Otherwise, I think everybody, all that those groups are going to be going to see Brave as opposed to Madagascar 3. Therefore, I do think it's probably going to fall to third. Abe at number 2. Prometheus at number 4. Just because the spacing, you're right, the spread between those movies is pretty sizable.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm torn is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, because, I mean, now I've seen advertisements for Abe, and it may just be the shows that I'm watching, but I've seen more advertising on television for Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Granted, it could be just what I'm watching. Though I did find it interesting that I did see, I'm finally getting around to watching the History Channel, I think it's the History Channel, the Hatfields and McCoys.
Mm-hmm.
We recorded it when they played all three of them as a marathon, like right after they ran them through the course of the week. So I finally got around to watching the first episode of the miniseries. And one of the episode breaks, they actually had a commercial for Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which I thought that was pretty freaking hilarious. I thought that was an interesting way to play to that audience. Because I'm sure there were people who were like, oh, an Abe Lincoln movie, what's this? What's he doing now? Man, yeah, I'm kind of on the fence here about Rock of Ages and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, because, like, HSX is showing Seeking a Friend at 18 right now. But it's gone up today. So it's trending upward, which is kind of lends itself to a good sign. Rock of Ages made $14.4 million this past weekend and has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 41.
Yeah, and I was wrong. It isn't several million between Rock of Ages and That's My Boy. It's like one.
It's one. So. It's one, but that $1 million at the $13 to $14 million range, I think that's enough.
And especially as roundly panned as That's My Boy has been.
Yeah, That's My Boy got a 24%. I'm still pretty comfortable
with my pick, but.
Yeah, I agree. I think Rock of Ages is going to beat That's My Boy, and mostly because I think the allure of That's My Boy probably went along with Father's Day weekend.
Yeah.
That it's kind of a father-son story, and that fathers and sons that like Jackass comedies might go take your dad to see that movie. So I think the safe pick is Rock of Ages. I think it is the safer pick. Because Seeking a Friend for the End of the World is kind of a, it's kind of out there, and it's only in 1,400 theaters.
Yeah, the theater count, I think, is what would...
I think if it was in a higher theater count at this point, I would be more inclined to give it the fifth spot, but no. I'm going to ditto you, Jonathan.
You know that means we're screwed, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Just saying.
I'm aware of how this works. So everybody else, this is your chance to beat the hosts.
This is your chance to not jump on board.
Yeah. Slingshot Please. Yourself well above. Hey, maybe they'll all pick Seeking a Friend for the End of the World and it'll suck. Shh, don't say anything. That's all I've got, really.
Yep, I'm done.
The only other thing is, and this episode will drop on the day, so if you're a person who believes in that prayer to a divine being will influence a sporting event, then say a prayer for Holden and his baseball team. Because those kids, now, he is my son and I love him dearly, but his baseball team really kind of sucks this year. He's doing fine. Their coaches are less than... I don't completely agree with their coaching style. And I can go into... this could be another after the ending credits discussion. Anyway, the team has not done well all year. They ended the regular season on Saturday. And we found out just before the regular season ended that there are like 10 teams in the league. 8 of them go to the end of the season tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Holden's team was one of them. We didn't think that his team did that well to even make that. But apparently they did. Either that or some of the other teams knew they must not have had enough players and were going to have to forfeit anyway. Because most people will kind of plan their vacations around, hey, the baseball season's over. Now we'll take the vacation. So we know we're not wasting money or, letting the team down or whatever. So they get invited to the tournament. The tournament runs Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So Monday's game, come to find out, we didn't find this out till after the game. The team that they played had not lost a game at all. So this must have been truly one of those brackets where the top played the bottom and so on. They won. Holden's team won. We were sure that we weren't going to be playing Wednesday. So we played tonight. First inning, Holden's team gets a run, the other team doesn't. Second inning, Holden's team gets 6 runs. It's like, what is happening? Now our team is well aware that there is a mercy rule because it had to be used for us a number of times. there's a couple of variants of the mercy rule. The mercy rule is that any one team can only score 7 runs in an inning. And if you score, if at the end of any inning, one team is winning by more than 15 runs, the game is over.
Mm-hmm.
We know these rules. We've lived them. So they're winning 17-0 going into the bottom of the second. It's like, whoa. Best the other team can hope for is to tie at this point. So the other team scored 4 runs. Third inning, we score none. And time is starting to get close. I take that back. At the beginning of it, we knew that this was going to be the last inning. Third inning is going to be the last inning because of time. There is a time limit.
Mm-hmm.
So we had discussed if Holden's team gets 5 runs, there's no way there's no way the other team can win. The game's over. Holden's team scores no runs. The other team scores 3 runs. Tie game. So we now have to play an extra inning. Holden's team scores a run. The other team does not. we're going to the finals of the 9 and 10 year old boys baseball league for our town. It is crazy. Like, the boys are all cheering out on the field, and I'm turning around talking to one of the other dads who's there, and it's like, who would have thunk that we would be here? Not only be here on Wednesday night, but that we're going to be playing on Friday night. So, yeah, that they're never thought they'd get this far, so who knows? They could still win it all. We'll give an update next week.
Well done, Holden. Yep. Good luck.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and end this.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
See ya. Well, I got a text message from my brother-in-law. I'm at work. I've got nothing, literally nothing to do. He sends me this text message. He's like, can I ask you a lit theory philosophy question? I'm like, okay, sure. And he's like, this guy, well, here, let me pull it up so that I get it right. He asked me, he says, so theorist Lloyd Bitzer contends that fictional situations that are met with fictional rhetoric are not real rhetoric. Neither the fictive situation nor the generated discourse is rhetorical. He does note, however, that fictive rhetoric may become genuinely rhetorical thought or genuinely rhetorical outside of the fictive context. So the idea is, so Bill Pullman's speech in Independence Day, as long as the speech only occurs from the fictional president to the fictional troops, then that's not real rhetoric, that's not real persuasive speech. He's not actually persuading anyone to do anything because all of it is generated by the writers, and so the writers are not creating real rhetoric.
Well, that guy's an asshole because this is our Independence Day.
Yeah, so it's like, this is my point. I'm like, okay, so in a sense, yes, Bill Pullman is not actually encouraging any troops to kill any aliens. That is true. That is undeniably factual. However,
no, but he encouraged me to kill some aliens.
Exactly. However, he is still persuading, the writers are creating rhetoric by persuading us to buy into that situation and feel for that audience. So it's like, even though the discourse between Will Smith and Bill Pullman has no real rhetorical weight, the discourse between the writers and the audience does. And I said, and that's true even of something like, I mean, if you want to make that argument about the Independence Day speech, you can make that same argument about say the Gettysburg Address. When we look back on the Gettysburg Address, that has no real rhetorical relevance to us. It is a character that is long dead, referring to situations that are long gone, to people who are no longer here as well. But they still have a certain sort of rhetorical power for us. And he's like, well, it's made real by the historical context. And I'm like, well, yeah, but history is defined by the winners. You know, the best history can do is try to give an unbiased approach, but there's just no way that you can create the entire situation surrounding a historical event. You know, you can't recreate the entire reality of living through the Civil War, just like you can't recreate the entire reality of living through an alien invasion. So that was my wonderfully exciting theoretical discussion.
That was pretty awesome. No, I totally dig that.
But my brother's like, I think I agree with him. I'm like, you shouldn't.
No.
He's pretty much wrong.
He's wrong. because this is our Independence Day, and we need to go kick some alien ass.
Exactly. That was entirely real, and don't let anyone tell you differently.
Yeah, that was entirely real until the part when they try to use a Mac to interface with an alien computer. Because at that time, it was hard enough to interface a Mac and a Windows machine.
That's fair enough. Well, you know, clearly the aliens were a more advanced civilization.
Yeah, they had figured out they had figured out how to break the laws of physics. Like,
I forgot the best part of the story was that I was like, you know, because he was like the people teaching the class, they, you know, they just kind of dismissed it outright and didn't say anything. I'm like, well, you know, the problem with your teacher's approach was they didn't use Bill Pullman because, you know, Bill Pullman should be at the heart of every explanation. And he's like, yeah, they use Brokeback Mountain. I'm like, well, there's your problem.
How would they even use that?
I would assume it's the "I wish I could quit you" bit.
I guess. See, I guess the problem, and what makes your argument so much more effective, is that you are taking it to a place of context that could not happen, because yeah. You're talking about a president making a speech about an alien invasion.
At Area 51, right. To Will Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Brokeback, I actually buy that as a realistic thing. That could really have happened.
Yeah, yeah. So the rhetorical weight there is that this could actually happen. The rhetorical weight of Independence Day is clearly something entirely different than what's being expressed.
Yes, exactly. Like,
he is absolutely right that the explicit, the straight rhetoric of go kill aliens, that doesn't work. But there's still persuasion happening here, and thus he's entirely fucking wrong.
Yep. I understand, and I agree with you.
Yes, two people. That's what I want. Soon, an army.
Oh, good.
Don't know what to use my power for, but I promise that I will use it horribly. Just, I will be a tyrant.
The flag is just going to be your hand.
I could break all sorts of promises with you, or I could just tell you that I'm going to be a tyrant outright. Which would you prefer, really?
I prefer the honest tyrant. That's I'm fine with that. Your nation's slogan could be "Talk to the Hand."
Ah, there we go. Fear the hand.
Fear the hand. Don't make the hand become the fist.
That would actually be great, great propaganda, cradling the nation in my
life.
The entire nation.
Life-sized.
Exactly. Oh, all right, I should go to bed.
Yeah, me too. Have a good one, man.
See ya.
See ya.